This podcast is a part of the Neuhoff Media Podcast Network.
We're here at Crossing Healthcare today to speak to Rebecca Armstrong, who's a behavioral health counselor here. I know you see patients of all ages, but today we're specifically going to be talking about kids. Mm-hmm. You work with kids as young as kindergarten all the way through high school?
Yep.
All right. Where are we today? And I think this is important because you have good advice for parents. And I think parents in 2023, 3 years out of COVID, really are themselves up against it in trying to figure out what's going on in their lives, what's going on in their kids' life. Mm-hmm. You don't want to panic and be overly. You don't want to not do enough. Have we ever been in a more confusing time to be a parent or a kid?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's been tough for everyone.
It's been a crazy. COVID was hard on everybody, especially kids, because they really focus on their kind of social world at that time, especially teenagers, and then coming back from being so isolated and then just thrown right back in, like everything's supposed to go back to normal.
Right.
It's been very difficult.
They've lost socialization skills, mm-hmm. And then the idea of like when you and I might have, you know, been bullied or had an altercation in school, you know, we went home at 2:30 and it was over, right? Mm-hmm. Now it continues on social media, the bullying gets tripled. I mean, it's like they never can get out of it.
They don't have an escape. Yeah. You can't get away from it. It follows you everywhere.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the technology. I think parents are just as guilty of being addicted to the machines as the kids are. How important is it to do downtime, to put the tablets away, to put the phones away, and sit down and just have conversations with your kids?
It's hugely important. Kids need to feel like they are valued. And if they don't have that attention from you, then they don't. And if they have to compete for your attention with a cell phone, it's just kind of sad. I mean, I lots of times tell my patients to literally have to prescribe them to eat dinner together.
That's part of the medical advice.
Eat dinner together, check in on your kids, do a little check-in once or twice, let them know that they can be heard and that you see them.
Okay, now being heard, I think probably everyone has a different definition of that, right? Is it more about valuing their perspective? I mean, when you ask them questions in an honest way, when they give you answers, don't dismiss it because it's something you don't necessarily think is right.
Right. It's very much that. I mean, they need to know that they can come to you regardless of what the situation is, and you are their confidant. You're listening to them. You're hearing their point of view. You're not necessarily taking sides, and it doesn't always change the outcome, but you are offering solutions and resolutions, but not giving them everything. Problem solving is huge for teenagers, especially at that age.
Right. I think you see this in experimental ways we're doing public education, where the kids are involved in writing what the rules are so mm-hmm. that there's ownership. And is that sort of building that voice for yourself at home? Because parents can often be just authoritative.
Yes,
I said no and no means no.
Right.
That's the way we grew up. But that necessarily isn't the greatest way to parent.
No. And it's if you give your child a choice in the matter, they're more likely to follow the rules and be cooperative than always butting heads together.
Because they have skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When you talk about knowing when to just listen, that's hard for people.
It is. And it's especially hard for parents because you want to fix everything for your kid. And sometimes you can't fix a problem. You just have to be that ear to let them listen. You listen, you let them vent, and just listen. It's hard. It's probably the hardest part of parenting.
All right, and we've got all kinds of new labels, and I don't know what all of them mean, right? But you have different kinds of parents that are doing it different ways. But we've all been there. I mean, am I over-exaggerating? Am I under-exaggerating? Is this really a mental health issue, or is this just normal teenage sort of hormones and what you're going through? I think today it's really tough to navigate those waters and not feel like you're either underreacting or overreacting. Mm-hmm. How do you find the balance?
I would say all kids go through struggles, and teenage life is hard, especially. Even young kids go through struggles. If you feel like the struggle is constantly causing problems, then that's when it's time to seek help.
Okay, are there red flags? I mean, I know that's a very generic expression, but let's start with grade school kids. What might a parent notice where you would think, okay, we're going down a road that maybe needs to be addressed?
If you have a kid that's normally really good at school, and then all of a sudden they're starting to get in trouble at home and at school, or you have a child that's been pretty even-tempered and then all of a sudden
mood swings,
lots of temper tantrums, lots of crying fits, lots of whiny, clingy behavior, those are signs that something's going on that you need to talk about.
All right, and is some of that amplified by COVID because we had such a unique once in a 100 year thing.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have that to lay over our childhood. We didn't have that where for basically our senior or, you know, at the time was a sophomore, missed his entire junior year of high school in person. I mean, that has to dramatically impact everyone's mental health and even complicate things even
And more. Especially for little kids that were like preschool age where they were just starting to learn how to behave at school, you know, how to play well with others and share and things like that. It's been really difficult. I've seen lots of patients recently that have come into kindergarten have extreme behaviors and are getting suspended because they just don't have socialization skills.
Yeah, or the same thing for those junior high kids who went straight to high school, you know, out of grade school. We're seeing a lot of that. All right, so to the high school level, you know, what are some of the warnings? What are things parents are looking for? Because the teenage years are going to be quirky no matter what. Even if you're the best parent in the world, you're going to have teenage stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But how do you know when it's beyond teenage stuff?
If you have a teenager that's isolating all the time, some isolation is normal because kids kind of withdraw from their parents and their whole, like, their circle of friends become the most important thing. So if you see a kid that's withdrawing from you as a, in a family, as well as their social environment, like they're not on social media or they're only on this certain one, or they're limiting themselves contact with friends, like they're not going out as usual, those are pretty much red flags. Behavior problems at school are always red flags. If you notice or suspect that your kid is using substances, those are red flags. Those are things that you need to have a conversation with your kid. And if nothing else, come to the first initial counseling appointment. When I meet with people initially, I usually have parents and kids meet together and we can get kind of both sides of the story. It also gives a kid that sense of power that, hey, I have a voice in this situation. I have some control of what's going to happen to me.
All right. And part of the talking points in getting ready for this was body language. And I don't think that most of us spend much time thinking about our body language. It's just natural to us. But your language and your kid's language.
Are very important. Your kids are constantly reading you, just like you're constantly reading them. So the thoughts that you have inside your head sometimes overpower what's actually going on. So an angry face, or what you might be like, I'm trying to understand and have a like this puzzled look on your face, your kid might be like, oh, they're really mad at me. I can't tell them everything.
All right. And when you say help them recognize their emotions, what does that look like in a real life conversation?
Just kind of validating that all emotions are good. Even, and everything from happy, sad, mad, angry, all of those are value and and normal and right to feel them in the moment. But the thing that we need to tie it together is what has caused the emotion and then how that emotion feeds into your behavior.
All right, so you would imagine, I would imagine, I know we have, most parents have a hard time finding what has triggered that behavior. I mean, you're a professional, you do this, that's your job to find that. How do I do that at home, not knowing what is just COVID and 3 years of being out of school versus what's just normal teenager? How do you discover what's triggering those emotions?
I usually encourage parents to ask, what happened? Are you hungry? Are you tired? Are you feeling overwhelmed? Things like that, so they can help kids kind of single in on what is actually causing the emotion and then justify in feeling this way.
Right. And is that easy for them to do?
No.
So are there things that can help?
It's even hard as an adult when you try to self-regulate, when you go, okay, you notice that you're getting really upset about something and like, what is driving this?
All right. So talk to me a little bit about coping skills. You know, what things can people do to feel better? What kind of, you know, maybe it's not to the point of therapy or seeing somebody, you know, professionally in a healthcare setting. What are some just honest to goodness good advice things that you can do with your kids to help them cope with the emotions that they're feeling?
Find something that they're interested in, what their passion is. Like for some people it's writing, for some people it's drawing, for some people it's coloring. Sometimes it's just spending time with your kid, carving out a evening to do like family game night, or just to go get coffee with a teenager, just spending that little, or sit and watch a TV show together that everybody can engage into. Just the main thing with coping is the connections that you make with others so that they become a positive support for you.
Okay, for parents that are trying to walk a balance of, you know, it's our job to be the adult and teach you how to be an adult. We want to feel like we want to protect you. That's just inherent in what we do. But we also want you to develop as your own person. Sometimes those things are in direct conflict with each other.
And that's, it's a hard balance to walk too, because I know I had a conversation with my only teenager of like, she's like, but you're my friend and you're my best friend, but I'm your parent right now. In time, we will be best friends, and we already are, but right now I have to be your parent. And some things don't allow me to let you do what you want. I have to have those guidelines and protect you.
Let me ask you about the stigma of just mental health in and of itself. I feel like we've come a ways, but there are long ways to go.
Yes.
I feel like that if everyone stepped forward tomorrow that desperately needs this help, there wouldn't be nearly enough resources to deliver it. I mean, is that...
That's so true. We are short now the way it
right.
is. But there is very much a stigmatism with mental health. It's both on the child part and the parent's part. The kid feels like there's something wrong with them.
But they probably feel that way because mom and dad are reinforcing that.
Sometimes, and sometimes just society is reinforcing. I mean, you could have super supportive parents, but the kid's like, don't tell anybody I'm in counseling, because nobody can know that, you know.
Yeah.
And they're willing to get the help. And on part of the parent side, it feels like many times you feel like a failure.
Like it's like somehow...
Something I did or something I did wrong, or that I failed as a parent.
But if that's the self-awareness we were talking about. It's not you.
Right.
It's them. And the focus ought to be on them and not what it does to your ego.
Right.
But I think that happens a lot more than we think.
Unfortunately.
Is it also like what, you know, people are treating mental health issues with substance abuse and all those kind of things? Do we see that particularly in smaller schools, smaller towns, where they feel like that's not a thing we have in our community? I mean, I feel like some of that stigma, even the more affluent or maybe the nicer place you live, there's less tolerance for some of these conversations.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because it does look like a failure, or others are judging you.
And so if you're in a kid in that situation, what's the best thing for them to do that they can do for themselves?
Reach out to your parents if you have that relationship. If you don't, any trusted adult, especially a trusted adult at school. Lots of times schools have counselors or a favorite teacher that you trust. Church communities can be a good source of support if you're needing that extra help and you need help to tell your parents or an adult.
All right, so somewhere that starts a conversation that could then lead down another path. Do you feel like with technology, the upside of that is there will be more help available to people? I mean, immediate help, where it's better to talk to somebody through a screen that knows what they're talking about initially than having to find a doctor's appointment and go to see that there might be help because of the technology.
There is lots. I really am really happy about the new 988. Because you can either call it and talk to someone in person, or you can text it and text it back and forth. And it's anonymous. For many people, they don't want to be identified.
That's a great point. Would people sometimes, some people feel more comfortable talking to a stranger who has expertise than they would in their small town or setting?
Or even their parents.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. So that number, which the state just put out recently.
That's a nationwide.
But we enacted it here in Illinois, will be a great resource then. Okay, staying calm. You know, how much do the kids model our behavior, particularly the younger kids, and how we deal with trauma or drama or things that aren't going right in life? How important is that? I know you talked about body language earlier, but they're modeling behavior based on what they're seeing from us.
Oh, yes. And they watch everything, even things that we think we prevent, they see, they still see. They hear everything, they see everything. And they're looking to see what is, quote, right. So parents have to be really mindful of their own behavior and how they handle a situation, because that's how the kids are going to be. You live what you learn.
All right. And then finally, because I think this can't be overemphasized enough, a lot of drug abuse, a lot of just experimenting, you know, is because you're not in a good place. And today with fentanyl and so much danger out there, you could have a kid overdose and die doing drugs one time. It's not like when we were kids. And I think sometimes parents need to be reminded of that. They think, oh, well, back in the day, everybody kind of did what... It could be fatal with one
dose.
Yeah. And how, I don't want to, I'm not trying to terrify parents, but you have to be aware that that's out there in the world. And if your kid's not getting what he needs at home or she needs at home, they might be looking elsewhere for that.
So that connection with your kid, that just checking in, even daily, that, hey, what do you want for breakfast? Or, hey, I saw you this morning, or check in and after school. What? How was your day? That 10, 15 minutes can make all the difference.
All right. Communication. It really does boil down to that. If you think that it's something that's beyond, you know, the mom, the dad, the parent, whatever that might be, what's the first step? You know, like, talk about crossing in particular. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't have health insurance. Maybe I don't have, you know, what are some of the obstacles that keeps people from getting help?
Lots of times health insurance, especially for mental health, keeps people out. If it's an emergency and you feel like your child is a danger to themselves or others, you can always go to the ER and have them evaluated.
What if they don't want, I mean, you know, we get into an area like I'm talking maybe older teenagers, mm-hmm. you know, where that becomes something that you can't convince them to do. Who intervenes?
You can also contact your primary care provider. At Crossings, we have health counselors that are embedded in the teams. So when someone comes into the office and we give them a depression screen and it flags high, they have what we call a hot handoff, and they come, and I or another counselor would come talk to the family at that moment and then offer counseling.
What might be on that depression screen that would be hot? I mean, what's type
any of type of suicidal ideations, or
so if they're having any sort of thoughts at
of
all
harming themselves or others,
right?
Or they're having homicidal, like they want to hurt someone else, lots of isolation, changes in behavior, lots of times will flag pediatricians or their primary care to be like, hey, we need a counselor to come and talk to us.
Okay. And then would you say the variety of people that you, I mean, I'm sure it's all over the spectrum, but some people can come and have a couple of conversations and feel like they're getting it squared away and figuring mm-hmm. it out. Sometimes it's maybe just pointing out the stuff we've talked about
right.
with them in an office. Some might be much longer than
that. I think
that.
Sometimes the initial assessment is the hardest because it's the scariest one. You come in, this is a complete stranger. You got to talk to them. You're going to tell them their whole life story. And then sometimes that's all people need,
yeah.
is that initial kind of like a dump of all my problems. And then for others, it takes a couple times. Therapy is very personal. It is whatever you need, and you have to meet the patient where they're at.
Rebecca Armstrong, behavioral health counselor. Thank you very, very much.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.